T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, ref, man?
Dirty soda and styrofoam. Spend a day in your mind, bro. Just it up and go to NASA.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
The 8 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show with you until 10 o'clock here tonight on 560 WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, whether you be on a computer, you can get us at WQAM.com. On a smartphone, download the radio.com app. I use it every day. It's very handy. However you listen, we appreciate your patronage here tonight. If you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Pound 560 on your cell. You can always text us at the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22, but please do not text and drive. How about this stat for LeBron James supporting cast last night, courtesy of Alex Kennedy? In Game 2 against the Boston Celtics, the Cleveland Cavaliers' starting backcourt of George Hill and J.R. Smith combined for 3 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 0 steals while shooting 1 for 11 from the field and 0 for 6 from three-point range. That's your starting backcourt. 3 points, 5 boards, 2 dimes, 0 steals, 1 for 11 from the field, 0 for 6 from 3. J.R. Smith last night went 0 for 7 from the floor, and he's not hit a three-pointer yet in this series, and he continues to put up bad shots. And that shove he put on Al Horford, which was essentially a five-point play in favor of the Boston Celtics with that flagrant run, one, and also including the bad three-pointer he put up prior to that, that was some of the most knuckleheaded basketball you've seen, something you would really only expect from J.R. Smith. So that was really ugly, and it illustrates again why I would say it's probably less than a 10% chance LeBron James is back in Cleveland next year. If I'm going to put on the Chris Sheridan hat here, I remember when Chris Sheridan told me and Brandon Guzio 4 years ago, 90% chance LeBron James leaves Miami and goes back to Cleveland. We called him a lunatic at that time. And then that 90% turned out to be right on the money. I go about 90% LeBron James is not back in Cleveland next year. And this was interesting. In a quote to Bleacher Report, an Eastern Conference high-ranking executive who, you know, he remained anonymous for obvious reasons. You know, you'll get nameless sources on this stuff. But he said, quote, when LeBron leaves. Not if. When LeBron leaves. Talking about the trades that they made this past February. That trade will be devastating financially. A lot of money in George Hill and Clarkson, and you have to pay Nance. I mean, this all adds up to, you know, obviously for a number of reasons, if you're Dan Gilbert, you're praying that LeBron James stays. He's got economic impact to that community that it wasn't that big of a factor in Miami. One thing we can say about this community, because we have so much else going for us when it comes to international trade, when it comes to industry, tourism money, there's a lot going on in South Florida that when, in 2014, when LeBron James announced he was leaving, it didn't have any real impact to speak of on the local economy in this city. Maybe it was a little bit harder to hustle and sell Heat season tickets, which were still sold out after that, by the way. Maybe you had to hustle a little harder to do that, but like it didn't cause like a local depression in this city. But you hear all the stories about when LeBron James left Cleveland in 2010, sports bars closed down. Like that city was actually impacted like in a tangible way economically, in a way that South Florida never could be by one player leaving. Like Dan Marino leaving could not have done that. Dwayne Wade, who also left, did not do that when he first walked out the door before coming back. Whereas LeBron James leaving Cleveland actually impacts that economy because it's harder for any businesses that relate to sport to stay in business in that town. They rely on that more than we do. Like, he actually had an impact on how downtown Cleveland was thriving as an epicenter of tourism and trade and nights out and all that. And so not only, I think, are they heading back to that point, and that's one of the reasons why Dan Gilbert is going to beg and plead with any God you can pray to, any religion, he will plead that LeBron James come back next year. But the Cavaliers are not positioned to be a team that will even sniff the playoffs without LeBron. You're going to go back to 2011, 2012, 2013, where you're always in that lottery. You're going to have to rely on trying to catch some more number one picks, because that team is probably a 30-win team or worse, 25-win team without LeBron James. I mean, say what you want to about Miami Heat, Pat Riley whiffing lately, couldn't get Gordon Hayward, can't pull off these blockbuster trades because you don't have the pieces. Your shelves are not stocked with first-round picks. You have pieces like Hassan Whiteside or Goran Dragic, who may be difficult to trade, Tyler Johnson, whose contract will be difficult to trade. So, yeah, you can say that lately Danny Ainge has been winning over Pat Riley, but at least if you compare the Heat situation since LeBron left 4 years ago to the Cavaliers situation from 2010 to 2014 when LeBron left, that team was in complete shambles. At least the Miami Heat have stayed competitive. At least the Miami Heat have, in the last four seasons, either made the playoffs or been very close to making the playoffs. You've competed for playoff spots. And every player out there, under the guidance and the tutelage of Eric Spoelstra, has played their ass off. That you've gotten the most of the guys you've had on the court, and you've been in that 40-plus win range. You've been competing or making the playoffs. You even, you know, 2 years after LeBron left, you even got to the second round and had a seven-game series with Toronto, and that was despite the fact that not only did LeBron leave, Chris Bosh got sick, Dwayne Wade eventually left. Steve had a lot more problems with that franchise than just LeBron James walking out the door. At least the Miami Heat have been competitive, where the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're going to go back in the toilet. They're going to go back in the toilet when LeBron leaves. And yeah, listen, I would argue that the best situation would be to go to Houston. You know, I think it's fair what people have brought up about Philadelphia. Doesn't it seem like Ben Simmons would be pretty worthless playing off the ball? Now, he's 21 years old, so maybe he could adapt his game, but you'd be harder-pressed to think he could make the adjustment that Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh or Kevin Love had to make with LeBron. That would seem to be a harder thing, given the way Ben Simmons plays basketball, for him to pull it off being off the ball. And if LeBron goes there, that's the way that would have to go. I think if LeBron goes to Houston, as tough as the Western Conference is and as hard as it would still be to get past Golden State, LeBron goes to Houston, they become the favorite. That becomes, even over Golden State, that becomes the team to beat in the Western Conference. And I think that would be the best overall team, because if LeBron goes to Philly, then, yeah, you've got a very clear path through the East. You cut through the Eastern Conference like a hot knife through butter, but you're not better than Golden State once you get to the NBA Finals. That's why, like, I think Houston would make the most sense for LeBron. They also throw out Los Angeles. If LeBron goes to the Lakers, you're doing that because of your brand. You're doing that because you think it'd be special to put on those colors, special to play for a historic franchise, special to play at Staples Center. But that team does not become the favorite in the West the way that Houston would be with LeBron. You're not the favorite in the West in that spot. The best basketball decision, and I think that's what it's about for LeBron at this point, winning more rings before he's done, the best basketball decision is the Houston Rockets. You agree or disagree?
I do agree. What I wanted to ask, though, is I was recently listening to a podcast with David Griffin, the former Cavs GM.
Sure.
Before he left, and then that was the whole offseason where Kyrie demanded out, and LeBron kind of went quiet and then resigned. And he said that LeBron's concept of signing these two-year option deals, where he basically has an out after 1 to 2 years, mm-hmm. is an unsustainable model for NBA teams.
Because they can't. How do you build when you don't have a commitment?
Exactly. So my whole question here, Dono, is obviously buying LeBron is worth the price.
Yeah.
But in terms of if you're building a franchise from the ground up, is it?
Man, not, I mean, not like a decade down the road, right? Like, if you sign LeBron July 1st, and he's going to keep doing the 2-year deals with the player option after one, like he's made it very clear he's going to keep doing that. You sign LeBron, and it's hard to say, I'm laying my foundation for after LeBron retires. I think you've just got to hope, and I still think it's worth it. Like, you sign LeBron, you know that worst-case scenario, we may have a 1-year window to do something special, but I still think you go all in for that. And you would like to think LeBron, if you lose, like, 7 games in the NBA Finals or the Western Conference Finals, that he wouldn't just quit and go somewhere else after 1 year. Like, at least, I don't know, at least you would hope that he would stick it out for 2 years, but I still think you do whatever you can to sign LeBron James.
I feel like the move makes sense for certain teams. Houston, L.A., I guess.
And probably less. Well, maybe less sense for Philadelphia, though, because Philadelphia, right. Their superstars are 20, 21 years old, right? I mean, Houston, there is no, like tomorrow for that team is literally tomorrow. It's not 5, 7, 8 years down the road. I think that's a team with a shorter window anyway.
And I'm a believer of a person that sometimes if you get another great player, you can stunt someone's growth. Mm-hmm. So I would do everything in my power to not stunt Ben Simmons's growth, you know, and not to say that bringing in LeBron James does that, but he definitely, like you're saying, is not going to be touching the ball as much.
Yeah. I mean, I still think at 21 years old, I think there's a chance he could adapt his game, but as of right now, he looks like he would be garbage off the ball. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Coming up next, interesting case statistically to be made for thinking that Ryan Tannehill, coming off of a 20-month layoff, September 7th, he's scheduled to start his first game in 20 months. Why? That may go pretty, pretty well. We'll discuss next year on QAM. Radio.com.
Radio.com. You ain't looking for a hound dog. Crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit. And you
I can always count
no
on the producer Tito Benach to have some pretty innovative hot takes and ideas about food. That's your wheelhouse, right? Like, if there was such a thing, and there's not, but if there was such a thing as food talk radio, you'd probably work in that over sports talk radio, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I probably could go all day talking about food.
Now, you brought up some stuff I don't agree with. Like, I'm not a fan of ranch dressing on pizza. You seem to like that for some reason. That seems like a very millennial thing.
I like it. I'm also the, because ranch is one of my favorite sauces. It's like a top five sauce for me. But I feel like there's certain ranches that are different, whereas, like, I feel like restaurant ranch is always better than the one you get in store.
It is.
And I don't
why. You're right, because when you get, like, and you get, like, the one that comes in, like, the salad dressing bottle, you get that ranch in the store, it doesn't taste as good, and you can only use that as salad dressing, right? Like, you try and dip chicken in that, it doesn't taste right.
Doesn't taste nearly as good as what you get at a restaurant.
Because I think the ones in restaurants are creamier.
Or they have, I think it's what it is, maybe they add more butter.
They might.
Maybe that's what it is, and we're just, you know, we're just lying to ourselves.
But it's like, even like the packet of ranch you get at like Wendy's with the chicken nuggets tastes better than the bottle of ranch you buy at the store. It does. Like,
No, you're 1,000% right.
Like, sorry, it just goes better with that. But you brought up, so like, I don't agree with ranch on pizza. I never will. I'm too much of a pizza traditionalist. Like, and let me drop something on you. It's not that I don't eat this, but people get angry when I explain that you cannot go to Italy and order a pepperoni pizza. It doesn't exist. Pepperoni, I mean, because they don't make it there. And it's not like pepperoni is not even a thing. It's basically spicy salami, which you can get, but they don't typically put that on pizza. The closest thing you could get, like if you're looking to put like a meat on a pizza, you can get either prosciutto or prosciutto cotto, which is the cooked ham. You can get that on pizza, but there's no such a thing as what we would consider pepperoni. In fact, if you were to try and order a pepperoni pizza, they'd probably think like you wanted like actual peppers, like the vegetable on your pizza. That'd be the closest thing you can get.
I mean, pepperoni pizza is my favorite type of pizza, but I don't.
Well, if you go to Italy, don't expect it.
But why?
It's an American creation. It's just something that we made up. Chicken Parmesan, same thing. You can't get that over there.
What?
Yeah, you can't. It's and they would never serve it there. It's too heavy. They don't make things that heavy in actual Italy. It's an American creation. Apparently, the origin of chicken Parmesan was like an old school Sicilian dish that people would make at home, but never at restaurants. It's not a thing over there. Fettuccine Alfredo, it's a myth. I've never seen it over there. But the whole pepperoni pizza thing, like I'm not saying I don't like I won't go out of my way not to eat a pepperoni pizza. But when I explain to people you can't get that in Italy, they get angry at me, they get angry at Italy, they get angry at pizza, they get angry at everybody. It's just a reality. So coming from that sort of a pizza tradition, I can't put ranch dressing on my pizza. You try to do that in Italy, you get slapped. Backhanded slap. It just cannot happen over there.
It's a newer generation, man. We got to accept these things.
But you brought up something. We were off on the ranch dressing tangent. You get annoyed, as I do, when people refer to boneless wings as wings. Like, they're not wings. Boneless wings, it's just something. I don't know who the first, like, corporation was to invent that term, but it's a way to make chicken nuggets more marketable to grown-ups. That's all it is.
It's a security blanket for those who don't want to call it wings and be like, hey, I ate wings the other day. But it's not wings. It's chicken nuggets.
It's not from the same meat. Like typical boneless wings are like breast meat. It's white meat. It's not the same. It's not wing meat.
There's the flats, you know, those are those types of wings, and then there's a drumstick.
Right.
But boneless wings are neither of those. They're just nuggets.
I think it's because, like, they realize we can't expect, like, grown-ups to order chicken nuggets, but if we call them boneless wings, then it'll be perfectly acceptable.
And they sell them for a cheaper price, too,
yeah,
because it's cheaper to make boneless, I mean, not boneless wings, I don't know why I'm saying that, but it's nuggets. But the only reason, yeah, if you told a 40-year-old man, like, hey, do you want these buffalo-flavored chicken nuggets?
You think, no, I'm not a child. But if you tell them, would you like some boneless wings? Okay, I'll give that a shot.
Sure, why not? Oh, it's cheaper? Count me in.
Yeah, like, I think the right way to call it would maybe be, like, buffalo chicken bites.
Yeah, that seems like the best way to go about it. Like, bites, you know, you can't call them tots because they're not tater tots.
Right. Because I noticed, and, like, you've probably come across people in your life who just will not eat any, like, meat off of the bone. Like, they won't eat chicken wings. They won't eat ribs because, like, they don't want to be bothered with eating something off of the bone. And so I don't think that those people who are too much of a wuss to eat actual chicken wings should be allowed to tell people, I ate chicken wings yesterday, when you weren't man enough to handle the real thing.
They're just lazy.
Exactly. Lazy. Lazy is what it is, my friend. 56022. On the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, that's how you get at us. Chicken tenders is what they really are, texter writes. Pepperoni pizza sticks. That's blasphemy as well. There's no pizza sticks over in Italy. Oh, I love this text. That's why they lost World War II. No pepperoni pizza. They kind of didn't lose, though, because Italy had the smart, like, they joined the Allies, like, right when the war was almost over. Like, they strung up Mussolini. They executed Mussolini. They said, just kidding. We're not with the Germans. We're with the British and the Americans and the French. So they switched sides just in time. Stupid Mussolini, another texter writes. 56022 is how you get at us on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Or get at us via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Interesting piece by Hal Habib in the Palm Beach Post. So you may be worried about how rusty Tannehill is going to be. You know, coming off of what is going to be about a year and three quarters of a layoff, assuming he starts September 9th, I accidentally said September 7th, September 9th is the actual opener, regular season opener for the Dolphins against Tennessee. Assuming Tannehill starts that game, he will be playing in his first regular season game for 637 days. Now, how have some other quarterbacks responded after very long layoffs? You'll come to find out that a lot of the Hall of Famers who have missed significant time have bounced back very well from long layoffs, and a lot of the non-Hall of Famers have not bounced back so good. Now, if I ask you, the way things look right now in 2018, do you expect Ryan Tannehill to be a Hall of Fame quarterback in the future, yes or no? 98% of you are saying no, and you can understand the reasons why, but here are what some quarterbacks did, some great quarterbacks and not so great quarterbacks did after coming back from long layoffs. You remember when Dan Marino, the legend, missed 11 months with a torn Achilles, came back in 1994, his first game back, 473 yards through the air, five touchdown passes, including a dramatic late score in Miami's 39-35 escape against New England. One of the great performances ever, whether it was coming off an injury or not, first game back for Marino, lit it up in historic fashion. Probably shouldn't have faith that Ryan Tannehill will do the same thing. Speaking of Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks, Hal Habib writes, we'll begin with Tom Brady, who tore his ACL and missed all but one game of the 2008 season. He immediately went to the Pro Bowl the next year, going 10-6 and winning the AFC East. His stats were very Brady. 4,398 yards, 28 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and a 96.2 rating. Green Bay's Aaron Rodgers fractured his collarbone in 2013, but came out sizzling in 2014 with 38 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions. His passer rating was 112.2, my God, 8 points higher than his career stat, which ought to encourage Packers fans since he missed 9 games last year with another collarbone injury. Speaking on this theme, continuing this theme of Hall of Fame quarterbacks being a different animal altogether, Peyton Manning sat out 2011 because of a career-threatening neck injury, with Gase serving as his quarterback coach, by the way, when he came to Denver. Gase serving as his quarterback coach, Manning immediately put up back-to-back seasons of excellence, both from a team perspective, 13-3 both years, and personally, 37 and 55 touchdown passes, triple-digit passer rating. That's not to say, of course, anyone is preparing a bust in Canton for Tannehill. This is where it gets real, right? Because we talked about a bunch of either current or future Hall of Fame quarterbacks coming back and looking amazing after long, season-long plus injury layoffs. Now is when you get to the other guys. Matthew Stafford played only 3 games of his second NFL season in 2010 because of a shoulder injury. The Lions obviously didn't have many concerns about it in 2011 because his 663 attempts led the league. Okay, so that's actually good. Matthew Stafford is a good case. 5,038 yards were a career high, and his passer rating was among the best ever at 97.2, among his best ever. So that's good. Carson Palmer, a spectator with the Bengals for a dozen games in 2008 after injuring his elbow, put up more pedestrian numbers when he returned. 3,094 yards, 21 touchdowns, 13 INTs. Ditto for Alex Smith, who's probably the most Tannehill-like quarterback out there. Ditto for Alex Smith, who missed 2008 with the 49ers because of a bum shoulder, then put up an 81.5 passer rating in 2009. The Dolphins have to hope Tannehill doesn't stay on the same track as Indianapolis' Andrew Luck, who missed 9 games in 2015 with a string of injuries, played well in 2016, but was back on the shelf again in 2017. Same story for Sam Bradford, who suffered 2 ACL tears and is now with Arizona, in the likelihood you've lost track amid his many travels. For dreamers out there, that 1994 performance by Marino ranks among the best. It was typical Marino. Dolphins were down 35-32 and facing a 4th-and-5 with 3 minutes left. Rather than try a 52-yard field goal from the Marlins infield dirt, Coach Don Shula liked his chances better by putting the ball in Dan's hands, or maybe Dan's eyes. In the huddle, Marino told receiver Irving Fryer, oh man, I love this moment, if he had one-on-one coverage, he'd be going to him. And when they got to the line of scrimmage, Marino gave him the eye that said all he needed to be said. 35 yards later, touchdown. It was a play and a day for the ages. I feel pretty good about what I did, Marino said. Dan's back, Shula said. Come September 9th, Dolphin fans can hope for 2 words coming out of Adam Gase's mouth. Ryan's back. That would be the fantasy of all fantasies, right? The fantasy of all fantasies to think that Ryan Tannehill is going to come back and play lights out. Now, maybe he's not going to throw for 473 yards and 5 TDs like Marino did, but if Tannehill can go out there and throw for 320, 3 touchdowns, have a passer rating near triple digits in his first game back, it's going to make a lot of people down here feel good. And it's going to remind you of, as much as you criticize the front office, the head coach Adam Gase last year, you do have to remember that 6-10, there were a lot of factors behind that, and one of those major factors behind 6-10 last year was no Ryan Tannehill for 16 games, that things would have been better with Tannehill. Would they have been 10-6, 11-5 good? Probably not. Would they have been better than 6-10? I can guarantee you it would have been better than 6-10 with Tannehill last year.
They didn't have a bye week either, Dono.
That's true. Yeah, their bye week was week one, thanks to Hurricane Irma. Oh, man. Well, listen, the Buccaneers, what was their record last year? They did beat the Dolphins in the makeup game, though. They did actually beat the Dolphins after they played the makeup game with their joint bye week. 560-22 is how you get at us via the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Yeah, a lot of people were, I think rightfully so, angered by that Ethan Hawke story. And it's funny because I found this story at one of my favorite sports blogs, LarryBrownSports.com. And I pull up this story about Ethan Hawke and his New York Knicks tickets. And my intention was, I think this story would be a great way to make fun of the Knicks and make owner James Dolan look even worse than he already looks. And then upon reading the story, I realized Ethan Hawke actually looks like more of a D-bag than James Dolan. So Ethan Hawke, who, here's actually the next thing I need you to Google for me, Ethan Hawke's net worth. Because there's a stat out there for every celebrity. Oh, Buccaneers went 5-11 last year. They were even worse than the Dolphins. But Ethan Hawke, who's an actor and a millionaire, presumably a millionaire, Ethan Hawke is all upset at James Dolan, says, I'm a Knicks fan historically. I used to get free floor seats to Knicks games. And then I started criticizing the team publicly. And so now I am outraged. I don't get freebies anymore. I am outraged that James Dolan has taken my free seats away and they now want me to pay $7,800 like anybody else for floor seats. Doesn't Ethan Hawke sound ridiculous? And he said, I'm now teamless. So he's turned his back on the Knicks because they won't give him freebies. I could understand if your face is like on a picture outside the arena and they don't let you in Madison Square Garden, if you're barred from the arena, if security won't let you in, then you can be upset. If you're upset because you criticize the team publicly and so they will not give you free tickets anymore, boo-hoo, cry me a river. You sound like an incredible D-bag when you say that.
He's apparently worth $55 million.
$55 million, and he can't pay $7,800 to sit next to the Knicks bench. $55 million net worth. And this guy can't shell out a couple of bucks for a ticket. I mean, why don't you, if you can't afford the floor seats, sit in the 400 level with the real fans. That's what I do. I'm not worth 55. I'm worth like 55 bucks, but I sit in the 400 level with Uptown Dale. Be a man of the people. So Ethan Hawke is saying he's no longer a Knicks fan, and he's trying to, you realize how ironic it is. Like, you're trying to criticize ownership. You're trying to criticize James Dolan when you sound even worse than ownership. How dare they take away my free tickets because I criticized them in public? I would expect any sports franchise to do the same. At least they're not suing you the way the Miami Marlins sue their season ticket holders. So you're not being sued. You're not barred from the building. All the Knicks have done is, because you're publicly saying we're a crap organization and you don't like that we fired Mike D'Antoni, yet you still want us to give you free floor seats. Screw you. I don't blame the Knicks for that one bit. That might be the one good decision James Dolan has ever made. Keep that crybaby out of your free seats. If he wants to show up to a Knicks game, pay real, actual U.S. currency. Pay dollars like everyone else. So I never thought I would say that. I agree with James Dolan on something. And on the other side, I agree with Nick Saban. I agree with Nick Saban on something he said about UCF. The Alex Dono Show continues next.
Radio.com.
Guys, I've said it three different occasions. Well, then I guess I have to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I think I've said this over and over and over again. I regret that. I wish that there was some way or something that I could have done to handle this better professionally. I don't know how to do that. I'm trying to get our players to listen to me instead of listening to you guys. It's like poison. You know what I mean? It's like taking poison, like rat poison.
That'll do it.
Crimson Tide wins the national championship. The Bear would be proud.
Alabama gets a second chance and makes the most of it. They win the BCS championship behind Coach Nick Saban.
The process continues. Saban with his third national championship at Alabama.
I just can't figure out how we get here.
Here's some of the greatest hits from Nick Saban over the years, and I hear that. Everything that he said there and those highlights, it makes me want to punch somebody in the face hearing that. Overall, for the most part, I despise Nick Saban. Going back to the, I'm not going to be the shucks, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach, drives me insane. But it doesn't mean, in the interest of fairness, it doesn't mean I don't occasionally think that Nick Saban drops wisdom. It happens once in a blue moon. And listen, here's another thing. I hope everything that Nick Saban has said about Minka Fitzpatrick, who's now a Miami Dolphin, is true. Right? When Saban talks about his work ethic, his versatility, best player I've ever coached, you hear stuff like that. You want to believe that Nick Saban can be correct from time to time. But let me say this. I never thought that this would occur, but it's now happened. Two times within the last calendar year, I have strongly agreed with something that Nick Saban said.
I just can't figure out how we get here.
That's a great question.
I don't know.
Two times now within the last calendar year, Nick Saban says something I agree with. The first time was, it was during this past football season. He went off on this random tangent. Nobody knows how he got there. But he was complaining about seeing kids on campus wearing jeans with holes in them and thinking that was cool. When he was growing up poor in West Virginia, they would kill to have jeans that didn't have holes in them. And now kids are walking around thinking that's cool. I agree with that. I don't know how we got to this point that jeans with less material are more expensive than jeans with no holes in them. Doesn't make any sense to me. That was number one. But number two, Nick Saban this week made some comments about the ridiculous self-proclaimed national champions, UCF. And now you can understand, you're in Nick Saban's shoes. Your team won an actual national championship. It's got to bother you a little bit when some other program that did not win a national championship is trying to mooch off of your accomplishment by claiming they won a national title. But I can agree with what Nick Saban says here and the logic he put behind it. Saban told USA Today in an interview that ran Tuesday that he's not buying the arguments. The argument is this. Some folks associated with University of Central Florida claim their Knights are college football's true national champion. They were the only undefeated team in the FBS last season, and one of their victories was over Auburn, a team that beat both participants in the college football playoff game. You guys know what that means to me. That means UCF has an argument that the system screwed them over, that they should have had a chance, could have had a chance, or should have had a chance to be in the college football playoff, but they weren't. It doesn't make you a champion. The same way Miami got hosed by the BCS in 2000, they got hosed by a referee in the 2002 title game. I don't pretend that those were both championships. I don't walk around and say, remember that time we won a national title in 2000? You're living in a fantasy world if you say that. Here's what Nick Saban said to USA Today. I guess anybody has the prerogative to claim anything. That is so great and so dismissive. What do you think, coach? What do you think about UCF claiming they're national champions? Well, I guess anybody has the prerogative to claim anything. But self-proclaimed is not the same as actually earning it, Saban said. And there's probably a significant number of people who don't respect people who make self-proclaimed sort of accolades for themselves. Man, Saban is dropping the hot fire there. While on the field celebrating Central Florida's 34-27 victory over Auburn in the Peach Bowl, athletic director Danny White proclaimed the Knights national champions. The words national champions appear at the top of the team's verified Twitter account. The players were given national championship rings, which, folks, that's as good as a participation trophy. Like, do you remember when And this happened to all of us. Well, anybody from my generation anyway. I was born in 1984. You're born in the 80s or 90s. You're playing in a youth sports league, right? Let's say you win an actual championship. You play in a tournament at the end of the year, a jamboree, I guess is what they called it in elementary school, and you actually win first place. You feel thrilled when they bring you a trophy. Mom, Dad, look what I accomplished. Then you look over to the teams that went second place, third place, fourth place, ninth place. They get the same exact trophy that you get. Doesn't it cheapen that? As a child, you wonder, I worked so hard to actually, in my case, I worked so hard to ride the coattails of people who helped win this championship, but I worked so hard to win this championship, and the team that came in fifth place is getting the same trophy. They're getting a participation trophy. That looks an awful lot like the trophy that I'm holding right now. That's what the UCF championship rings are. They are, it's a bad message to millennials. They're saying, you didn't actually win, but as far as we're concerned, you won. So they have those fake-ass championship rings. Here's one thing that I do think was cool by UCF. They gave their coaches bonuses for winning a national championship. If you want to give your coaches bonuses, that's fine. I wish the players could receive financial bonuses, but the crooked-ass NCAA doesn't allow that. But if you want to give your coaches bonuses, I'm okay with that. And the team was honored with a parade. And that parade went right through Fantasyland, where it belonged, right through Walt Disney World. Took a U-turn and went through Fantasyland three times because that's where that parade actually took place. But again, I agree with Nick Saban. And Saban, you know, he did, after torching UCF, he did make some kind of backhanded compliments, which was nice. We've only had one undefeated team, and that's really hard to do, Saban said. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for their team and what they were able to accomplish. And they can make every claim that they should have been in the playoff. Again, Saban and I agree 1,000%. I get that, but we have a system, and it's not fair to the people who went through the system and earned their way playing really, really good teams. I mean, really good teams and really tough games. It's not quite fair to them for somebody else to just decide to claim a national championship. So I thought that was eerie when I read this today, because not only did Nick Saban and I, and obviously he's got more of a vested interest than I do because he actually coaches Alabama, but not only do Saban and I agree on this, but he makes the same exact points I've been making for months, that just because the system was unfavorable to you doesn't mean you then can circumvent the system and just say, we're mad that they didn't let us into the playoffs, so we're just going to pretend we won a national championship. I think that point is well made.
I'm more surprised that you're agreeing with Saban twice now.
In a year.
It's really scaring me.
Do you ever buy jeans with holes in them?
No, I don't. You know why? Because the only place I would ever want holes in my jeans would be the knees, because apparently that's trendy.
Yeah, right.
But
I don't have
very good-looking knees.
You have unattractive knees?
I have very scuffy knees. Like, I've fallen down a lot.
I think that may just increase the fashion, though. Like, it looks like you've got some, like, war scars, you know? Like, that may make you look cooler.
Or I look like a bum, which I actually look like.
Yeah, that's also one of the reasons why, like, I never hopped upon, like, the torn jeans fat. I couldn't pull it off. Like, do you think I could pull that off? I don't. And
you can say,
I feel like you're being nice when you say I could. Like, you don't have to be nice to me. We're in a safe space right now. You can be honest with me.
Probably not.
There you go. So how dare you? I think the closest thing I ever had to trendy jeans, like I had, man, this buddy of mine in college, he was like 18, 19 years old for a while. This dried up for him pretty quick. But for some reason, this 18-year-old friend of mine had a 27-year-old girlfriend who was a rich model. Don't ask me how he pulled that off. She dumped him, like she cheated on him and dumped him, like at some point during freshman year of college. But for like 3 months, he had this great deal where 18-year-old, he was living the dream. 18-year-old guy had a 27-year-old rich model girlfriend who would buy him things. She bought him a new laptop. She would buy him clothes. We happened to be like the same size at the time. And he had like all these super expensive jeans. He had like $200 jeans. And like he would lend me a couple of pairs. I just never gave him back and he didn't even notice. Like that was the closest thing I ever had. I had a couple of pairs of $200 jeans that like I borrowed and never returned to a friend of mine. And then eventually I my waist size went up. I was like a 33 at the time. That didn't last for very long. The waist size went up, and you could say goodbye to those. I'm at like a 38 now. Texture writes in, did Tito say that he's always on his knees? That's why he has scars there?
Oh, good one. Good one. Nice.
Did you play catcher in school?
No, I was more of a pitcher.
I don't know what just happened here. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. Donna, the fact that Saban had to take time to address that with UCF means in that lying head of his, he has some doubts about what he's actually saying. Tainted championship. You went off the rails there a little bit with that text, but here's what I will agree with. The fact that Saban took time out of his day to comment on UCF, doesn't that get them what they want? And like I've had people who are UCF alums admit to me that they're doing this for attention. Like they're doing this to not only bring attention to themselves for their undefeated season, but also to try and influence change in the system, to the playoff system. And the second part of that, I've got no problem with it because I think they can reform that playoff system. I think there should be at least six teams let into the playoff. If you want to do Power 5 conference winners, an at-large, where UCF would have been the at-large last year, but Power 5 conference winners and an at-large, the top two teams get a first-round bye, so that's how you would get away with six teams in the playoffs. I could totally see that working, and if that had been the case, UCF would have gotten in. But maybe what the texter said, the first part of that was right, that UCF is winning here because their trolling effort by claiming to be national champions, it's actually got Nick Saban talking about it. I think that's worth noting that Saban didn't just say no comment and dismiss it. He actually talked about it.
I think we're opening up Pandora's box here a little bit, though, with the concept of expanding the playoff, because I agree that UCF didn't get a fair shot and they should have been in the playoff. However, where do we stop? Right? Because where do we stop? We figuratively stop at 8.
Right.
But then
somebody's always going to be unhappy.
Exactly.
I mean, just think, okay, I'll give you the perfect argument. How many teams get into the NCAA tournament? 68? And you still have teams that feel pissed when they get left out. Right? So obviously, yeah, if you open up the college football playoff to 8 teams, the 9th team is mad. You open it up to 16 teams, the 17th team is mad. You're never going to completely fix it. What I would say with only including 4 teams, I think you have here the pitfall of leaving out a really good team, or in UCF's case, a really good undefeated team. The system can leave that out. I would hope that you would have less outrage if there was a 6-team or an 8-team playoff. At least the margin for complaint gets smaller the more teams you let in, the more inclusive you are.
I think 6-team reduces the margin of error.
Yeah.
And it especially allows this committee to weigh, does a secondary Power 5 school, is it better than a possibly an undefeated Group of 5 school?
That's fair, yeah.
And that's where you really begin to weigh that.
9 o'clock hour, the Alex Donald Show coming up. And by the way, we're minutes away from tip-off in Houston. Toyota Center, can the Rockets salvage the series? So I think if Golden State wins tonight, that's all she wrote. If Golden State wins tonight, you take a commanding 2-0 lead, especially having won the first two games on the road. I mean, unlike Boston, as much as I expect the Celtics are going to eliminate the Cavs here, all that they've technically done so far is take care of home court, right? They've not even won a game in Cleveland yet. Whereas if Golden State wins tonight, they've got a 2-0 lead on the road before they even get back to Oracle. So that series could effectively end tonight. The Alex Donner Show continues here on WQAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.